It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, condescending liberals who never get enough of the sort of tired, whiny blather. I'm not going to do that. I'm not a whiny blatherer, Mark Riley.
No.
No, I'm a sort of, you know, marginally informed reactionary loudmouth, but not a whiny blatherer. I don't like to be accused of whining. I'm not a whiner. Like some guy wrote an email. Not that I obsess about bad emails. Okay?
You shouldn't.
Yeah, no, I don't. You know, but yeah. There's this one guy.
All right.
This one. All right, there's these three guys.
Here we go.
And this one girl. All right.
Three and one. Wait a minute. This
three guys.
The beginning of a porn movie. What are you talking?
I don't have the train anymore. he said he was making some sort of judgment of me based on the HBO special, which you saw.
Was it tonight? No, I haven't seen it.
Hilarious. He doesn't read the emails. He hasn't seen the HBO special.
I don't care.
Do you know we do a show here?
I don't care. I do not care.
Are you listening to yourself right
not
now?
Not one. No, if I didn't have to, I wouldn't. Believe me. For a long time, I worked in the studio without headphones.
I'm taking mine off.
There you go.
Who am I?
There you are.
Now I can hear myself in the room. This is weird. I'm just talking. I like listening to myself as if I'm
here,
on the
air. Cup your ear the way Dan Ingram used to. Oh, there you go. No,
Dan
only one.
Ingram.
There we go. Yeah, there.
Hello, Kimo Sabis. Good morning, Kimo Sabis.
That's all the headphones you'll ever need right here.
Oh, how did he produce that demonic succubus offspring? You know, he seems like such a good guy. Isn't Laura Ingram his daughter?
I don't think so.
I thought she was.
Well,
she
doesn't spell the name the same way. She has to change it.
Oh, really? Then it's not.
Yeah, okay. No, because hers is Ingraham.
Okay, all right, good.
But maybe you're right. Maybe.
You know what? Maybe I'm talking out of school, which, you know, I don't want to put out the wrong information. I guess she's not. That was wrong of me to say that. But, you know, it made sense in my head. You know, that he would have it. But now people are going to be like,
actually,
is that true?
Actually, Brittany McDonald's telling me that she is.
She is?
Yes.
She changed her name. Or he changed his name.
Yep.
I'm not going to get into this, but we're going to go with she is?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's interesting. The great top 40 radio personality produces evil spawn. You know, but relatively hot. right wing freak show. Anyways, what was I talking about? So this guy writes in about me. He says, Marin is a loudmouth kind of whiner. It doesn't matter what would be going on. He's not good for the cause because he would whine. If it's not about the right, he would whine about the left. He would whine and scream about anything. And you know what, Chris? You know what?
What's that?
The guy's right. All right? I would, but so what? You know what I mean? Just because I'm a malcontent, aren't we fueled by malcontent? Isn't that what makes people do things? What makes action happen? What sets precedents? Wherever there's these monumental bursts of inspiration, it's from some guy screaming about something. Is it important that it's about something specific? No. The expression of anger, frustration, passion is what's important. That's what I think, Riley. If you just have somebody to go, here, just point it over here. That's it. Aim it. Go. Yeah!
There you go. Good.
Unfortunately, a lot of that got pointed at Clutch Larson, early on, our producer. But he absorbed it. He's interesting. He's like a hate sponge. It just sort of sinks right in. He processes it. He makes notes for later. And then you'll pay. Could happen next year, next week, a year. Could be 10 years. All of a sudden, something's going to hurt you. And
uh-oh,
he'll be at home, you know, sticking pins into a Marc Maron doll with a cape on it.
Oh,
because,
my
you know,
God.
It would be just this remade Superman doll from his collection. You know? I'm going to make this mark. That's so weird to see. Wouldn't it be funny if Clutch Larson unraveled? What? How hilarious would that be if he just broke down and all the tendrils came out? And, yeah! All these weird Scandinavian repressed, like, you know, strange help me tendrils just flailing about. He would be like the scariest comic book evil villain ever. Oh, no!
My God.
It's the exploding nerd! Yeah! It's all these strange geek tendrils that just wrap around everything and start pulling it into this dark hole. And then after everything's gone, it's just Larson sitting in nothingness going, I told you. I just did a large equation. I had a very strange dream with Barbara Walters in it last night. This is outside of the dream diary. This is like one of the secondary dreams.
Really? You didn't watch The View yesterday or anything?
No, I didn't. Oh. It was the weirdest dream. Right? I bought a mansion, this broken down mansion, okay, in California. And I was there, and it was Barbara Walters' mansion. And she was showing me around, only most of her face was missing. Her nose was missing. And in place of it were these two sort of metal, like tubes with little, they look like siphons. You know, not siphons, like funnels. Like, you know, like a funnel that you stick in top to pour water in? Like two of those stuck in her face instead of a nose, and you could see her skull and stuff. And she was walking me around this mansion, and it was really run down and weird, and there was a basement. And in the basement, it was all dark and empty and musty, and there were just little piles of dog poo everywhere.
Oh, my
and
God.
I was down there with these two freaky rock and roll guys going through this shipment of used clothing that they said they get delivered to my house. And then we go upstairs, and all these freaks are smoking heroin and playing poker. And I'm like, there's no way I can live here if these guys are going to keep coming in here like this. So I had to figure out a way to get rid of all these people smoking heroin and doing and playing cards in my house. But it was Hollywood, so part of me was sort of like, yeah, this happens here.
Wow.
And then like outside, there was just a whole street. I was also on my property was this colony where all these families lived. And I remember just walking down the street. I'm like, how am I going to manage all this property? And then Barbara Walters was leaving with her strange noseless face that had two, funnels stuck into her face. And like I paid $500,000 for the house. And just as she was leaving, a real estate person who was smoking heroin at the card table said, you can only get $275,000 for this. And I'm like, oh, no. Well, is it too late, Barbara Walters? She goes, yes, you've already signed the deal.
Wow.
Anyways, I woke up and my bed was filled with the news. So that wasn't even a real dream diary. That was that wasn't the one that I'm going to be.
That wasn't the one you normally do, but the.
But the funnel in her face.
But the heroin smoking.
Yeah, which is a bunch of cats hanging around. They just kept coming in and out, and I just assumed it was because this is where they came to do that. But I didn't understand what their connection to Barbara Walters was. And what are you doing this weekend, Riley? Let's get out of my stupid head.
I'm going to spend a quiet weekend at home. I mean, it's part of this weekend is going to get quiet. Of course, see, I read a lot. I read a lot of newspapers.
Thank God someone's doing it because I'll skim some stuff, and I'm counting on you to do the reading.
Well, I do some reading, and then I watch soccer all day.
I'm kidding. I read my ass off.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, Mark?
You're going to watch soccer. That's cool.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Who are you talking to? Which Mark?
Actually, I'm sorry. Mark Maron. Yeah. To dream that you are taking drugs means that you're in need of a quick fix.
Uh-oh.
And you may be thinking of a potentially harmful alternative as an instant escape from your problems.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Does that ring a bell?
Does it ring a bell? Is it like every waking second?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Is that dream or is that just the way I am? Yeah, of course, no kidding, I'm looking for a quick fix. Yesterday, I was so proud of myself because I denied myself a giant macaroon before I went to therapy. It's ridiculous. I get to therapy because, I have this compulsive eating thing. I get to therapy, and I'm like, I took action today, man. He's like, why? He's like, I'm usually in here stuffing my face with cookies so I don't have any feelings with you. Yeah, I'm like, well, I didn't buy the cookie. And I tried to cry, and it didn't come out. I can only cry during commercials and movies. Hotel Rwanda, bawling like a baby by myself, crying. I was crying at the beginning. Commercials, weeping. It's ridiculous. What's wrong with me? Why can't I express my emotions where they're supposed to be? Huh? Why can't I put why can't I just grieve? Why can't I just grieve the little boy that wasn't parented properly? Can we change the whole tone of the show and call it to help? Right, I don't think so. I've had enough of this crap.
No, that was just a quick answer. What can
so
I say?
Soccer, man. I want to go to the Brooklyn Museum. You're going to watch soccer. I'm going to go to the Brooklyn Museum. Do you know where it is, Kayla? The Brooklyn Museum. I want to see the Basquiat show.
Oh, yeah. The number 2, 3, 4 trains on weekends. And you just get off at the Eastern Parkway, Brooklyn Museum. You're right there.
All right, so who's going with me? We're going tomorrow. I'm going to go see Basquiat at the Brooklyn Museum. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the two judges that have made it through the nomination process and are going to be voted on and see what they're all about and why they're bad. 15 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government. We come now to the exciting conclusion of our story.
Secret agent Henriette Mantell turned out to be a Republican plant. Mark's lovelorn assistant, Blanche, foiled her attempt to have Mark publish a false document that would have made the liberal movement look foolish. Now, Mark Maron has had his friend Bill Clinton sneak him into the White House for a first-hand look at Bush himself.
You sure you want to do this, Mark?
This is the center of the mystery, Bubba. If there's a shadow government, I'll find it with the president.
Well, keep your voice down. Look through this two-way mirror, and you can watch the Oval Office.
A secret room. Amazing. Are you sure the Secret Service can't see us?
I made a point of finding every place in the White House where security cameras weren't pointing. You get my meaning, buddy?
You were looking for holes in security?
Mark, the only... Never mind. Look, he's coming in now.
So the doctor says, is he joking? And the old German guy says, no, I'm serious. You get it, Dick?
Yeah, sure. If we could just deal with this now, Mr. President.
Maybe I didn't tell it right.
No, it was an excellent joke, sir. Now, to the matter at hand, gas prices are way up. And that's driving up other prices with it. So your approval ratings aren't looking too good.
Maybe we'd fix that if we found... What's his name?
Osama bin Laden.
Right, him. But we still don't have a damn clue where he is.
They don't know where he is? This is the most shocking development of all. They're telling the truth.
Just keep telling people we're closing in. That should hold them for a few more years.
There is no conspiracy. The shadow government is just a shadow of the government, I guess. There never was any secret master plan. But then, why aren't they out looking for bin Laden?
In the meantime, we gotta fix your poll numbers. We're telling the press that gas prices will drop if Democrats approve all your judges.
Why can't we just pump all the oil we want in Iraq? That was the whole point of invasion. Cheap gas. You showed me that chart saying the free market would fix Iraq. It was right there in black and white, and green, and little pink squares.
I'm afraid we're pumping less than we're out there, sir. At this point, we're holed up in the bunkers.
Oh, my God. These guys are just screw-ups, and they're covering it up.
No, I'm pretty sure the Iraq war was a success. I heard it on Fox News. And I haven't seen any bodies coming back, so we must be winning. You go check that.
No, it's been checked and rechecked. The Iraqis don't trust us. No one is investing. It didn't work.
I'm pretty sure you're wrong about that, Dick.
I sneaked out of there like Tom DeLay ducking his hotel bill and ran into the streets. I had to tell everyone. There was no connection to bin Laden. No September 11th conspiracy. The tapes of bin Laden were fake. The document was fake. There was a conspiracy, all right, but it was to make me and the rest of the left look like idiots. And if there was one thing I refused to do, it's look like an idiot. Hey, everyone, listen to me. There is no shadow government conspiracy. George Bush is not in league with Osama bin Laden. He's just really incompetent.
We know. Get out of the street.
What are you, an idiot?
I flew out of Washington for New York and raced up to the radio studio. Thank God I'm in time. I've got to go on the air and tell the people.
I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Mark.
Riley, what's going on? Why are you pointing a gun at me?
You could have done this the easy way, Mark. Just publish an obviously fake letter, then spend the rest of your life in discredited obscurity. Would that have been so hard?
Larson! Riley is a right-wing spy. He's going to shoot me. Make him stop.
The bloggers want Riley to do it.
It's been a long year listening to your neurotic left-wing psychobabble. Marin, you're canceled.
Not while News Daddy's in the house.
Oh, my God! News Daddy threw himself in front of the bullet that was meant for me.
Hey, Riley, the bloggers want you to try again.
Forget it. I'm splitting before the cops come.
Wayne! News Daddy! Speak to me! Are you okay?
Don't sweat it, Mark. The bullet went in my chest. I stopped it with another bullet that was in my chest already, but prop me up to do the news. It's the top of the hour.
Sure, News Daddy. Anything.
Good morning. This is Air America Radio News. Gas prices remain high this week, but Bush administration officials say this will change once Congress approves all the president's nominees for federal judge. Meanwhile, a shooting occurred at a New York radio station today with one so far non-fatal injury. The victim was an unidentified but freaky stone-cold black sex machine, and Mark Maron walks the streets carrying secrets that muddle the misty dawn of the naked city. Can't read much more news copy. Losing blood, seeing double, passing out. This is Air America Radio News. I'm Wayne Gilman.
This has been The Shadow Government, written by Mike Ferrucci and Barry Lank, and produced by Jonathan Larson, with engineers Brendan McDonald and Douglas Desher. The Shadow Government starred Mark Maron, Jenny Schneier, Mark Riley, Wayne Gilman, Brendan McDonald, Jen Hodgkins, Barry Lank, Mike Ferrucci, Kent Jones, Doug Desher, Shelley Lewis, Deanna Neal, Catherine Sardina, Bruce Cherry, Dan Pashman, and Jonathan Larson as the Beaver. Mark Maron will return in a new adventure when he faces the religious right in Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. Until then, this is your announcer, Barry Lank, saying, beware, beware of the shadow government. And remember, tomorrow alternate side street parking will be in effect. Good morning.
There you go. That's wow. The end of that particular serial series. You know, I wanted to say farewell to some of our San Francisco listeners who've been listening out there in San Francisco from 6 to 9 in the morning. We are being taken off. Your Clear Channel affiliate there has decided that you'd rather hear Jerry Springer from 6 to 9 on your breakfast drive. So, you know, we're going to miss you, and there's nothing we can do about it from this end. We will be on at 3 to 6 out there in San Francisco. So
wake up early.
There are other ways to get it. Some people are streaming out of Sacramento, but thanks for the dozens and dozens. It looks almost, you know, hundreds of emails. We're sorry, but we had nothing to do with it, and I don't know how this all happens or what takes place. I'm just, you know, here every day trying to do the best I can on the air and you know, get ready for the show. What happens on an executive level is, you know, way out of my hands, but very disappointing to us, as I know to many of you. And, you know, I was out there at Cobb's, and I know how important the show is to a lot of you folks. And, God, I'm getting all choked up. It's like I'm getting, take care. And it's been a pleasure being out there.
And you can still go to morningtradition.com and find the other ways you can listen.
That's right. There's many other ways you can listen, Riley.
That's
some
right.
People are podcasting on these newfangled computer machines that you can carry with you on the subway. Other people are
not them.
Yes, I'm so close to getting one, man. Now that I'm making my own CDs.
Yeah. So you're gonna be Mr. iPod before too long.
I think so. Let's talk about these judicial nominees when we come back. We've got Priscilla Owen and Janice Rogers Brown on their way up to the nomination level,
and they're bad.
Yes.
Really bad.
Yes. Bad.
We'll tell you why on Air America Radio.
Activists.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. The GOP-controlled Senate Judiciary Committee, on identical 10-8 partisan votes, gave its approval to Texas Judge Priscilla Owen and California Judge Janice Rogers Brown. So let's educate me and the people, Mark Riley. Tell me about Janice Rogers Brown and why she's bad.
Well, see, this is a classic example of the Bush administration playing the race card.
And the chick card.
Well, yeah. But
the woman card.
In Janice Rogers Brown's case, what they're doing is saying, well, we are now going to appoint the first black woman ever to the D.C. Circuit,
mm-hmm.
which would be true if she's confirmed. But if you look at her record is just horrendous. On issues pertaining to civil rights and equality of justice for black people in this country, her record is abysmal. She's also, and I'm telling you, when you start looking at this, she was, for example, considered unqualified back in 1996. This is when the California State Bar evaluated her and found her to be, quote, prone to inserting conservative political views into her appellate opinions, unquote.
Does that mean she's a judicial activist, a conservative judicial activist?
She's the kind of judicial activist that warms the cockles of people like Bill Frist and Tom DeLay. See, because they like those kinds of judicial activists.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a couple of cases here. In Anguilar versus Avis Rent-A-Car, Latino employees brought a race discrimination lawsuit against a fellow employee for the use of racial epithets in the workplace.
and the court ruled in the Latino's favor. Brown dissented, writing that racially discriminatory speech in the workplace was protected by the First Amendment.
Now, does that mean that she wouldn't have any problem with maybe some of her appellate colleagues calling her the N-word while they were at the water cooler or something?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not sure. What is it? How do these judges, like, let me ask you this, Riley, that, you know, we've got this, the war against the judiciary going on Sunday, the big Justice Sunday, the great
Injustice Sunday,
Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade revival meeting that's going on to 1,000 churches. Now, why is this judge? Why is this judge appealing to them? Because I don't see her ruling on religious moral issues.
No, but she inserts those religious / moral opinions in some of the stuff that she writes. She is their poster child. And see, what has happened, Mark, and this has kind of happened almost out of the view of the African-American community, there has been kind of, put it in sports metaphor, a black farm system to bring people like Janice Rogers Brown in the pathways that have been created by Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas was an obscure jurist when he was nominated to the Supreme Court. Janice Rogers Brown, on the other hand, has a record that goes back. She was originally from Alabama, went to school at Cal State University, and settled in California. And she's got a very long record within the state. And when you start looking at some of these things, for example, alleged Latino gang members, according to Janice Rogers Brown, could not congregate together in a certain neighborhood. So in other words, while she may be in favor and saying that racially inflammatory speech is protected by the First Amendment, when it comes to Latino gang members, their ability to congregate together is not protected by the First Amendment. When you look at a case that she did, Pietros versus the Bank of America, this was a woman who sued the Bank of America for race and age discrimination. This was under the Fair Housing and Employment Act. The trial appeals court said she couldn't sue because it was preempted by the National Bank Act of 1864. Supreme Court reversed that decision. Brown dissented, saying that that 1864 act was more relevant than the state's anti-discrimination laws.
But see, the interesting thing to me about this, she is an extremely conservative judge.
Yes.
Okay? And it seems to me that the Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade, the people that are taking on the judiciary branch of the government, which they claim is liberal, there's no indication of that. I mean, Republican appointees now constitute a majority of judges on 10 of the nation's 13 federal appeals courts.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of these judges. Are they just assuming that these judges, these conservative judicial activists, are going to play along with their agenda on the moral issues, or what they call them, on reproductive freedom issues?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they definitely will play along with that. But are they going to take any steps towards replacing constitutional law with biblical law?
I don't know if they'll go that far, but here's the important thing. The D.C. Circuit, along with the Ninth Circuit out in California, mm-hmm. is seen as a liberal circuit. It's one of those circuits that makes rulings that drive the people in the Bush administration nuts. Janice Rogers Brown is, in addition to the Bush administration's touting her as the first African-American woman, she will also be the beginning of changing the overview of that D.C. circuit so that they're looking a little bit less, quote, liberal.
And they're trying to do that to the Ninth U.S. Court Circuit.
Well, they want to break that one up. I mean, they don't even want to try and remake that one. They just say blow it up, divide it in half, I think it's Arizona and some of the parts of the Ninth Circuit that are outside of California, make that one circuit, and then leave the San Franciscans essentially to themselves.
Let's talk about Priscilla Owen.
She's another bad news person in terms of, again, showing up the fact that these lawmakers are hypocritical when they talk about judicial activism, because these folks are judicial activists, and the fact of the matter is they can sit up and argue about judicial activism, but they only do that when it involves judges or courts that make decisions they disagree with. Priscilla Owen. She's a person, first of all, who decides usually in favor of corporate America. She was, during her 1994 campaign, lent her name and image to a Political Action Committee fundraising brochure that actively supported the dreaded tort reform or restricting victims' rights. Enron versus Spring Independent School District. She upheld a law that allows companies to choose between two dates to evaluate their inventory for tax purposes. It saved Enron $225,000, and Enron gave her $8,600 in campaign contributions before the ruling. Sound familiar?
Oh, sure.
Sound a little Tom DeLay-ish to you?
Oh, yeah. Well, she's a big corporate kiss-up.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting to me, though, what's really provoking my mind right now, Riley, is that in terms of allowing, you know, allowing, like, let's say, like, conservatives not only allowing, but getting on board with the Christo-fascist zombie brigades in this battle against the judiciary, in this extreme way that they see that the country should become a theocracy ruled by biblical law, that's also allowing these, you know, extreme right-wing Republicans within the House who may not be religious fanatics to push forward these, you know, conservative judiciary activists, as in, you know, Priscilla Owen and Janice Rogers Brown, because they're not theocrats, they're just, you know, insane right-wing idiots, and the only bone they're throwing to the theocrats is in these two cases, it seems, the reproductive freedom thing.
Well, see, that's exactly where all this is going. This is going as a pathway to the United States Supreme Court and the question of overturning Roe v. Wade. That's what all of this is about in its end game. It's not so much that Janice Rogers Brown or Priscilla Owen is going to end up on the Supreme Court, but what they want to see happen is having many of these circuit courts and the federal judiciary below the Supreme Court stocked with conservative activists, which, and when cases get to the Supreme Court, they want that one person, that one arch-conservative, who will join with the other four that are already there. And I'm assuming now we're talking about the replacement of William Rehnquist and maybe one other justice on the court. Maybe Sandra Day O'Connor might end up retiring. That means that Bush will have the opportunity to put people on the court that will finally overturn Roe versus Wade. And Owen and Janice Rogers Brown, their infrastructure toward that end.
But it's interesting that, you know, the judges that ruled over against, you know, the reinserting the feeding tube in the Schiavo case, the, you know, the judge.
They were Republicans.
They were Republicans. They were conservative appointments. So these Christo-fascist zombie brigades, the Focus on Family people, the Dobsons, the Anthony Perkins, they are, you know, willing to, what they're, I think, putting into place is a method of bullying justices. And, you know, to their credit, some of these justices, even though they're conservative, are standing up for the judiciary, are standing up for, you know, the constitutional law that
yeah.
they represent. And that's a good thing. And, you know, apparently, you know, a couple of them made a statement that we'll talk about them when we come back, to somewhere to the degree that, look, this has happened before. The judiciary has been, you know, taken on by these extreme factions in the culture before. You know, I'm mildly comforted by that, by not much.
Look, they are trying, in some instances, to eat their own. When they go after an Anthony Kennedy, certainly no arch liberal, they are prepared to eat their own. And as progressives, we have to recognize that and take advantage of it.
Okay, I'm with you. So when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, can I use the word or the two words? Can we say flip-flop? Can we say
sure.
flip-flop in reference to Santorum, to Senator Santorum of Pennsylvania, who is now like, okay, maybe filibuster is good. Maybe it's good. 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Just wake up. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Isn't it great when someone like Rick Santorum starts to babble and backpedal? Isn't it great? It's 49 past the hour, Air America Radio. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Rick Santorum. What? Here it comes. Well, somebody better bring me that thing. Yes, here it comes. The liberal agenda. Sorry, so long walk from the fax machine to my hand. Yay!
Hey.
Today is Earth Day. One, today is Earth Day. Throw on a costume and dress as the melting polar ice cap. Two, max out your credit card by buying sign-making materials to protest Bush signing the bankruptcy bill. 3, now that Ryan Seacrest has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, reassure your hamster that he still has a chance.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right. 4, demand UN intervention in the dispute between Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie. And 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You know what comes after Justice Sunday, don't you? Mind control Monday through Sieg Heil Saturday. Wake up, people. The sermon's about control.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie are beefing?
I guess so. I didn't know anything
about this.
Dude, you know, I don't know.
I'm reading the wrong papers.
I read it. Apparently, there's some big problems on this silly show that they do. I have no way of knowing because you know why? I don't watch the television.
I don't watch that, but, I mean, and, you know, beefs between...
My time has become so crunched, dude. I mean, I don't have time to watch TV at night. On the weekend, maybe I'll watch a little. I'm busy watching some, catching up on some films.
Uh-oh.
But let's get into Rick Santorum. I love it when these guys have to start backpedaling. And this guy is such a yutz that, you know, the exciting thing is he's made statements that are so, you know, radically conservative, and now he gets some poll numbers yesterday. What is he, about 14 points behind the Democratic challenger?
Yeah.
We're still a year and a half out, but it freaked him out to the point where all of a sudden Mr. Nuclear Option, Mr. Pro-Death Penalty, Mr. Super Christian is starting like a month ago. He said, hey, maybe I'm not sure about the death penalty. And now he's saying, maybe we should let the Senate debate this thing.
Well, you know, what's funny is the Hill.com has a story that says that internal Republican polling,
that means good.
By, with, and for Republicans,
good,
is saying that the American people are not down with ending this filibuster thing. They're not with it. They are opposed to it, a majority. And Santorum, whose motto might as well be the answer is blowing in the wind, is now, and remember now, he was one of the chief proponents of this thing. He was the guy that was going on all of these Sunday talk shows saying, oh, no, it's a done thing. We're going to get this done.
Well, I think the important thing for the American people to realize is that if you are not a religious extremist, that, you know, what we're seeing here is we're seeing a waffling Republican, as many of them do. These guys do not have any sort of, barometer. They don't have any real character. They're just stinky politicians who are trying to kiss your butt so they can get their own agenda through. And Rick Santorum has been one of the most prideful, outspoken ones of this particular ultra-right wing sort of ideology, and now he's all of a sudden, like, he sees some polls a year and a half out, and he's going, oh God, I might not be able to maintain my seat.
Here's a Santorumism. Mm-hmm. This is a direct quote from the senator from Pennsylvania. People see checks and balances as Democrats checking Republicans, not the legislative checking the executive or the judiciary checking the legislative. End quote.
What?
The wit and wisdom. Yeah, exactly. What? That's Rick Santorum.
Right.
That's the guy the state of Pennsylvania elected to represent them in the upper house of Congress in this country. The man is absolutely clueless. Clueless. I mean, you know, some of these guys, the Bill Frist, at least, you know, you may hate what they do, but you can give them a couple of points for cunning. But this guy, he's unbelievable.
And then an aide of his said, quote, if anything is bad, it's the American public has bought the misinformation campaign that we're trying to take away the filibuster. They are!
Yeah, that would be it.
To finish your quote, the campaign has caused misinformation. This campaign, the campaign of us, or the Democrats, or the other side, has caused misinformation, and that's where we have a messaging challenge. See, the way that the American people are working now, even some of our listeners, not the liberal or conservative or the progressive or democratic ones, but some of the conservatives that listen to our show, all they care about is whether or not they have an efficient argument, whether or not they have an efficient message, whether or not the propaganda is effective. And they will do anything they can to protect the message, to restructure the message, to restructure the argument. You know, a lot of times, you know, everyone gets so excited about the argument when they listen to Rush Limbaugh, when they listen to Hannity, when they take talking points. It's all about, like, well, you don't have a very good argument. You know, but the truth of the matter is, I'm sorry I'm saying, you know, when I'm...
That's
when
all right.
I'm,
come
I'm,
on
I'm,
with
when
it. Come
when
with
I'm
it.
Thinking out loud, it happens, is that it's about ethics. And what's turning out to be true is that the American people care more than these Republican politicians assume they did about ethics and about, you know, debate and about the way democracy is supposed to work. They do care. When it comes right down to it, you're not going to fool them unless they're completely delusional or complete religious fanatics, but they can smell a rat. They know when something isn't working properly. They know when arrogance, pride, and corruption have taken over the government. They feel it, and it's happened over and over again through history.
Oh, yeah, and what Santorum is doing here is a gambit. I don't know that he is actually opposed to trying to use the nuclear option. He may be as much in favor of that as he always has. But this is what he's doing. He's saying, put it off, take the Senate recess, which is coming up, go back to your home districts, and try and, as you put it very aptly, counter this Democratic propaganda that people are putting out. In other words, what he's doing is tactical. He's saying, okay, if we need to kind of clear the decks here, we've got all this stuff about Shivo and all this stuff about delay and all this other stuff that's on the table, let's clear all of that off the table, and the best way to do that is during a recess when you're back in your home districts for a week.
I just hate the way these guys talk, is that the right and the Republican politicians also say, well, they're using politics.
Oh, yeah.
They're making this a political... That's how they talk to humans, is that, you know, they talk to their constituents that those Democrats, they're just being political. Well, what the hell are you? See, they're mixing their message because they have this homespun language, because that's how they talk to their constituents, like children, like disciplinary fathers, like people who are self-righteous and know what's really right. And they say things like, the Democrats are just playing politics. Well, of course they are. That's
and so are, these
but
people.
But that's the thing. The people are starting to realize, wow, what do they think, we're stupid? They're starting to show through to their constituents, their working people, their people that, like, you know, that they're just like us,
yeah.
That they're being devious, political, overreaching, corrupt douchebags.
Well, yeah, and the other thing that they're doing here is saying, look, you know, if we get too deep into this nuclear option thing, Harry Reid has threatened to tie up the Senate's business. Now, Santorum and the rest of these people have favors that people are starting to try to call in on them now in terms of dealing with it. They've already done the bankruptcy bill, which is a thanks to the credit card industry. There are other issues that these folks have on their agenda in terms of dealing with some of these folks that, you know, gave them all their campaign money. Santorum doesn't want to tie that up with Senate gridlock, and that's part of the reason why he may be just saying, wait a minute, you know, we need to rethink this, because if we get stuck in this nuclear option and we can't do business, the corporations that fund us might not be too happy.
Yeah, the people that own us are going to be pissed off.
Wait a minute. You're supposed to be picking cotton. You're not supposed to walk off the plantation.
Where's my bill?
Yep.
Damn you.
Yep. That's exactly what's going on here. And, again, people need to understand that they are, you know, people are trying these little cunning tactics. I can't even say cunning in the case of Santorum. Santorum is too transparent to be cunning.
Oh,
but the bottom line here
graceless.
Is, yeah, absolutely graceless. And, you know, sooner or later, the polling is starting to show that the American people are seeing through this crap.
Yeah.
They are seeing through this veil of nonsense that these folks have put up since George W. Bush got reelected. And from as far as I'm concerned, it's all going to go down from there. We're going to be right back. We've got a couple of things coming. I've got
Dog of the
week. And much, much more here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's it, folks. Good morning, geniuses. It's 6 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. How are you? Philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. If you do have a sense of humor and you live in Cincinnati, I will be there Saturday, May 6th and 7th. For all you fans who listen to 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio, come on down. It'll be fun. You can go to morningsedition.com for tickets and info. If you want to oppose Bill Frist's appearance with the Hippo Christians, who are planning Justice Sunday, go to the links page on morningsedition.com as well to oppose that. Right now, as we do every Friday, it's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
All right. There are candidates aplenty, Mark, for this week's dog.
Mm-hmm.
How about California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who said the country's border with Mexico should be closed? Then he said he screwed up and that his English was faulty. And he wants to be president. Then there's Microsoft, which has withdrawn its support of a bill that would bar discrimination against gays and lesbians. Say it ain't so, Bill Gates.
Wow.
But one man has these pretenders beat. It's Senate Republican leader Bill Frist. The good doctor from Tennessee wants to be president in 2008. To that end, he's fallen into the fatal embrace of the religious right. If we're lucky, they'll drag his ambition down right along with their neo-fascist judge-bashing agenda.
We've talked a lot this week about Justice Sunday, the evangelical slop fest taking place in Louisville the day after tomorrow. Fritz remains scheduled to address the gathering, which is being televised in churches across America. His presence, however, has not gone unnoticed. Now, officials of several major Protestant organizations say they agree with Democrats that Fritz is the political point man for an unhealthy mingling of church and state. In fact, an official of Fritz's own Presbyterian church says his participation in Justice Sunday violates church principles. So, Dr. Frist, it's our humble conclusion that your pandering to the worst of the religious right makes you unfit to be majority leader, let alone president.
Mm-hmm.
You are, no doubt, the morning sedition dog of the week.
That's it.
That's it.
Also, that's a good one. Tom DeLay, I wanted to say this, that... Tom DeLay, that American Airlines, Bacardi, Nissan, R.J. Reynolds, and Verizon are just a few of the companies that are coming to try to bail him out with money.
Wait. Say those again.
American Airlines, Bacardi,
okay.
Nissan,
Hello, Continental.
R.J. Reynolds, and Verizon. If you go to dropthehammer.org, you can find out some of the other companies that are doing business with DeLay at this point in time. And maybe
Are you got any stock in them?
I think one of the mutual funds that someone got
really?
With my money might have Verizon, and I have Verizon phone lines. And I was under the
Singular?
Well, I got to do something.
I know.
I mean, I was under the impression that all the lines here in New York were Verizon, and that they're rented from Verizon.
Yeah, they are actually, because Verizon is the old New York Telephone, the old Bell Atlantic.
Right.
So there's no way
to avoid it. That's the weird thing about that. It's very hard not to be a hypocrite on those levels of what you consume and what you use in terms of where that money's going through the corporations that that make the product you're using.
Yeah.
You'd almost use nothing.
But this is Earth Day. We got to do something.
Oh, yeah. It's also the day before Pesach.
Oh, yeah.
Have a good Pesach. Hey, what is this? Wait, Larson's telling me we've got someone who's claiming to be John Bolton on the phone. Is that possible?
No.
Now, you know John Bolton. Tell him to hold on for a second. It can't possibly be the real. All right, but let's take the call. John Bolton. Now, Powell's starting to, behind his back, say this guy's bad news.
Yeah.
We've got a guest on. Coming up Michael Isikoff from Newsweek, who just wrote a piece about how the ambassador to South Korea said that he's had some experiences with him, an exclusive piece that we're going to talk to him about.
Yes.
This guy is a live wire. He's a hothead, and now it's like it's coming down.
Yeah, it is coming down, and the White House has issued, I think, two strong statements of support for Bolton, but the fact that they did two in the same week means I think he's going down.
Oh, that would be sweet. Well, let's take this call and treat it,
with the respect it deserves.
Well, it could be him.
Okay.
Yes, this is John Bolton.
Yeah.
I don't usually call into radio programs like this, but I happen to be listening to your show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt compelled to defend myself in a calm and rational manner.
Well, I think you've got a lot to explain. I mean, besides saying that the UN shouldn't exist, there are lots of allegations about your temper and the shoddy way you treat subordinates. And
I think you're trading in unsubstantiated allegations that represent an attempt to destroy my character and maintain the status quo at the United Nations.
Right. But these stories all seem to match up, man. I mean, you apparently berated a State Department analyst for a CIA report about Chinese weapons. Another State Department official called you a kick-down, kiss-up sort of guy. Several people allege that you tried to fire them because they didn't agree with you.
I believe I've been misunderstood and misinterpreted and mischaracterized.
Look, dude, an aid worker says you chased her down a hall and threw things at her. She says you were pounding on her door and kept sliding threatening letters underneath it. I mean, from all accounts, you have a real mean streak, man.
Listen, you stupid motherfucker!
Whoa.
You keep talking to me like this, I will fucking break you!
Hey, hear me?
I'll stick my fucking fist into your heart and pull your nuts out from the inside! You will not disrespect Bolton! Bolton will own you!
What is he channeling, Sam Kinison or something?
But he's definitely not the right guy.
And you know who knows he's not the right guy?
Who's that?
Well, I mean, maybe Michael Isikoff, but we'll find out about him. But Colin Powell!
I know, you called it, man.
I said the other day
What is Colin Powell saying about John Bolton? Because remember, he worked in Powell's State Department, and apparently his analysis is not so hot. Now, one of the things that goes on around the Beltway is with a guy like Colin Powell, who is a Republican, but is a respected Republican by certainly moderates and even some of the more progressives within the Democratic sure. members of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen is a lot of times you have a guy like Bolton who's got a tenure in the State Department, so you call his former boss. It's the same thing you would do in any other working environment. Hey, what do you think of the guy? And you know what?
A reference.
Yeah. Well, apparently people like Senator Lincoln Chafee and Chuck Hagel have certainly raised concerns about Bolton's confirmation, and guess who they both spoke with lately?
Powell.
There you go. Ka-ching. And apparently, the former Secretary of State didn't advise them to oppose Bolton, but he offered, according to this story in the Washington Post, a frank assessment of the nominee as a man who was challenging to work with on personnel and policy matters. And now his spokesperson says he has returned calls from senators who wanted to discuss specific questions that have been raised. Chafee's spokesman said at least two conversations took place.
Yeah.
So what we see is Colin Powell, when asked, has offered a pretty scathing assessment of this guy.
Right under the wire, too, this is going down. So he's not going to make it. I don't think Bolton's going to make it. It's beautiful. It's 14 past the hour. We'll come back to talk to Michael Isikoff about his exclusive story and some new information about John Bolton when we come back on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition.
Hi.
On Air America Radio, we'll be talking to Michael Isikoff from Newsweek Magazine just in a few minutes. Also, Doug Krieger, our ex-CEO, is out there in the ether somewhere. Doug, where's our breakfast? All right, Friday, where's our breakfast? That's odd that you'd think we should get a regular thing going from City Bakery, but I'm not going to say City Bakery until City Bakery delivers our City Bakery breakfast.
You said it four times.
I did?
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? You know, it's kind of like you know. Maybe I should say City Bakery instead of you know.
There you go.
Then they'll bring croissants every 5 minutes. So here's my dream diary from yesterday. This is on a clean mental palate, mind you. I'm at the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge with my dead cat Butch and her cat Army. She says, Mark Maron, we must stop the oil companies and the Bush cronies. The only drilling that should happen here is amongst ourselves. I said, I'm with you, Butch. Look over there. There are 20 bulldozers coming right at us. No offense, but you're just a bunch of cats. Butch lights a cigarette and exhales in my face and says, as usual, Mark Maron, your lack of imagination distresses me. Watch and learn. Then she runs off, always a bad sign. So the bulldozers are bearing down across the tundra when 300 cats suddenly run in front of the bulldozers and flop on their backs, you know, like cats do. The convoy screeches to a halt, and this big foreman in a hard hat says, hey, you kitty cat's going to have to get out of the way now. We're drilling here. Butch looks up at him and says, you will violate this sacred land over the carcasses of my comrades. The foreman spits a stream of tobacco and says, all right, have it your way. Fellas, get out of them dozers and help me move these critters out of the way and bring some of those cat toys. It was weird that these big construction guys had cat toys, but they did, and really good cat toys. They started teasing the pile of cats, and the smell of catnip and tinkling bells filled the air. This is bad. Butch was doomed. Just then, Butch pushed the siren buttons on a bullhorn and screamed, comrades, attack! Take back your home! Suddenly, hundreds of animals charged out of the woods and attacked the oil workers. Snowy owls swooped down, pecking out eyes. Caribou stampeded, and after trampling at least 20 of them, paraded around with steaming entrails on their antlers. Polar bears gutted the engineers and then toyed with survivors by swatting them around like rag dolls until they begged for death. The cats, well, they played with cat toys. When everyone else was dead, Butch climbed up the foreman's leg and dug a razor-sharp claw into his chin. So tell your boss that all who come here will meet a similar end. And tell me this, Butch dug her a little claw a little further. Where did you get such wonderful cat toys? I woke up and my bed was filled with pine needles.
Oh, my goodness.
There you go.
Now, we're going to be getting to Michael Isikoff from Newsweek momentarily. But in the interim, Let's look a little bit deeper at this Colin Powell Doppler.
Yeah, you called this dude.
Well, yeah, because you know, it seemed logical to me. But here were two very telling signs. Number one, Colin Powell did not sign a letter that was signed by seven other former U.S. Secretaries of State or Secretaries of Defense that supported Bolton. And his former Chief of Staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, told the New York Times that Bolton would be, quoting here, an abysmal ambassador. Now, remember that at this point, there's nothing George Bush can do to Colin Powell. He can't fire him. He quit already.
Yeah.
He's out in the suburbs of, I think, suburban Virginia, I think is where he lives. You know, tooling with his car. His son's resigned. You know, he gets to play with his grandkids. This is, I think, to some small extent, Colin Powell's revenge. He knows the guy's bad. He knows the guy's wrong for the U.N. God, you know, look at what Powell ended up having to do with the U.N. You know what I'm saying? He had to go up there and make the case for some non-existent weapons of mass destruction. He, I don't think, wants to see an American superstructure where that mistake is made again. I think he sees John Bolton as key to that.
And he's a cat who, you know, Powell's a guy that respects, you know, diplomacy.
To some extent.
To some extent, yeah. All right, well, that, like, things aren't bad enough. There's a few more skeletons coming out of the closet. Newsweek exclusive. In a Newsweek exclusive, former U.S. ambassador to South Korea describes his run-ins with the Undersecretary of State, and Michael Isikoff of Newsweek joins us from suburban Washington to tell us more. Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you on. So what does Thomas Hubbard, former U.S. ambassador to South Korea, have to say about John Bolton exactly?
Well, not a lot of positive things. Hubbard's interesting because he's a career Foreign Service guy, had been Clinton's ambassador to Philippines, but also was President Bush's ambassador to South Korea for, you know, the whole first term, 2001 to 2004. He had a number of run-ins with Bolton that speak to both temperament and substance here. On the temperament issue, he recalled that the first time in early 2003, Bolton comes to Seoul, South Korea, and expects Hubbard to set up a meeting with him with the president-elect of South Korea. The problem for Hubbard was that the guy had already been the Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia Affairs, Kelly, had just been to Seoul the week before, carrying a personal message from Bush to the president-elect, and it was felt that they just met with the personal emissary. So he didn't set up a meeting with the president. The South Koreans said they didn't want to meet with Bolton. Bolton gets there, but Hubbard set up a bunch of other meetings for him, and Bolton gets there and is furious.
Yeah.
Furious with rage, reams out Hubbard for not setting up the meeting, slams down the phone on him, and then refuses to go to this other dinner that Hubbard had set up on him. You know, Hubbard calls it undiplomatic behavior and completely improper, inappropriate behavior. More substantively, Bolton, on a second trip, Bolton gave this now famous July 31st speech in Seoul, where he denounces the North Koreans, that calls life under North Korea a hellish nightmare, and Kim Jong-il a tyrannical dictator. It's a provocative speech, and it comes at a delicate time. There's there are these negotiations underway to try to get the North Koreans to cooperate on the nuclear issue.
Yeah.
The Bolton speech completely breaks it down. The North Koreans call Bolton the human scum. And anyway, Bolton's asked about this at his confirmation hearings just last week.
Yeah.
And he says, actually, I cleared that speech, fully cleared that speech with the appropriate bureaucracy. And that not only that, Hubbard, the ambassador, came up to me after the speech and said, good job, you really helped us out with that speech. Well, Hubbard, he's now retired. He listens to Bolton's testimony, and he's like, as he said, it not pleased at all. That's not what happened. In fact, he had been one of the vetters of the speech and had asked Bolton to make some changes to take out some of the more provocative comments. Bolton refused to do so. So it wasn't fully vetted. And he said, well, Bolton did make some other changes, and he did say, thanks for making the other changes. He never intended or never did say thanks for the speech in total, because he thought the speech was a disaster. So in that sense, Hubbard, listening to Bolton's testimony, hears this, contacts the committee, and says, look, that's not what happened. That's not accurate testimony. And he also reports the other incident because it speaks to Bolton's temperament.
Right.
Now, Mike Lizikoff, is temper? You've been inside the Beltway a long time. Is temperament alone enough to get this guy derailed?
Not alone. It's part of the picture. To his supporters, Bolton is, some of these examples show, hey, he's a no-nonsense guy, take-charge guy, aggressive, hard-charging, and gets what he, and forcefully presses his views with the bureaucracy. You know, put that way, it's not a bad thing. Now, some of these other instances where he reams out underlings, and particularly on the intelligence issue, those do get, I don't think there's been one killer blow at this point for Bolton. This isn't over. But the accumulation of these stories is, I think, what's doing damage, and kind of obviously having Colin Powell out there.
Well, Michael Lizikoff, can we get into that in a minute? Because we've got to take a break here. Will you stay with us so we can talk about Colin Powell?
Sure.
Okay, thanks a lot. We're talking to Michael Lizikoff from Newsweek magazine. Hang out, and we'll talk to him some more after the break. You're listening to Air America Radio.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get. You're wasting your time. The more you ignore me.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's morning's edition here on Air America Radio. We are in the middle of a conversation with Michael Isikoff, investigative correspondent from Newsweek, talking about the ambassador of South Korea and the interaction he had with Mr. Bolton. Now, we wanted to get into this. There's a news today that Powell is doing some behind-the-scenes politicking on behalf of getting rid of Bolton as a nominee.
Yeah, he's making phone calls, apparently, to senators and saying not entirely positive things about Bolton. In fact, to have him, apparently, Lincoln Chafee's office has confirmed that he's had, that the senator has had a couple conversations with Powell, and let it be known that he's not a supporter of Bolton. In fact, there was this letter that was circulated by former Secretaries of State and Defense that supporting Bolton that had been released by his supporters, and Powell had declined to sign it. So that was a pretty conspicuous absence right there. I mean, this is the guy who worked with Bolton. He was his undersecretary, and I believe that Powell's former chief of staff, Lawrence Wilkinson, has been quoted calling Bolton an abysmal ambassador. So that's pretty stinging from the guys who you worked with at the State Department. Now, I mean, if this is true, and there's no reason to question it, you have Powell, you have Thomas Hubbard, the Bush ambassador to South Korea, who I talked about before. You have Carl Ford, who testified last week, the former chief of the State Department Intelligence Bureau. All those are Bush appointees who served with Bolton in the State Department. So I think that starts to get some real traction there.
Michael Isikoff, if you were a gambling man, which I know you're not, what are the odds do you think that the president at this point, knowing what you know about this whole thing, do you think he'll withdraw Bolton's nomination?
No. That's not Bush's style, and the White House has actually been out there pretty aggressively pushing Bolton this week. So I think, the battle lines have been drawn. This is going to be a down-to-the-wire fight. It's not, all is going to rest with those three Republicans, I think, who strayed on the committee, Voinovich, Hagel, and Chafee. If they end up voting for him, the guy, they're under enormous pressure right now, particularly Voinovich, I think. They're really leaning on him, the White House is, and sort of subtly attacking him as well, saying, oh, he never attended the committee hearings, so really wasn't up on the evidence.
The big smear campaign is underway. So we've got some exciting politics coming up. Thanks for joining us, Michael Isikoff.
Anytime.
Thanks,
appreciate it. Nice talking to you. So you know, so it's coming down to the wire. This is exciting. And I think, what do you think? You think he's out?
I think he's out, but you know, he's under the Michael Isikoff is right. These three senators, Hagel, Chafee, and Voinovich, are under enormous pressure.
Oh yeah, they got the special operatives from Rove's office going, we got pictures.
Yeah.
We got pictures. You want to see the pictures? Recognize this? Remember this?
Wait till the next commercial we run.
Sure, sure. Yeah, the Godfather, Hagen.
Yeah.
is showing
cartoon!
Up.
Cartoon!
Yeah. There we go. The Bible's book of Revelation portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on the Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Garberville, California. Your Grace.
Come up hither and don't thither, thy loathsome mongers of wickedness and filth, and new improved wickedness with 20% more added filth. Ye have tabernacled with heathens and committed ugly congress with barnyard beasts, which according to Jesus is highly contraindicated. The end times approacheth, for Satan has usurped your domain, and thy souls have become the raiments of perspiring squirrels. For that is God's punishment for coveting thy neighbor's vestments. And ye all are guilty, for as we all know, everybody loves raiments. This abdominal, after 26 years of waiting, we all watched with great emotion as the most momentous story of religious importance our generation will ever know dominated the airwaves. An oily salt stain in the shape of the Virgin Mary appeared on an underpass in Illinois. Now thousands of Roman Catholics, and those of us who like to make fun of Roman Catholics, flock to see the stain every day. We have no plans to clean this site. We're treating this just like we treat any type of roadside memorial, said a spokesman for the Illinois Department of Transportation, whose acronym is just one I away from spelling out the word idiot. Sure, this is stupid, but remember, Jesus invented stupid. And this is a sure end-time indicator. The Antichrist is here and tying up traffic in our nation's cradle of sin, the Midwest. For it was prophesied in Revelation Max System 10.4 Tiger, and I quote it, "And there will appear a great wonder near the Slauson Cutoff, and Satan's dark angels will sing. It's Cal Worthington and his Virgin Mary Spock. Just take the 57 North until you reach the San Bernardino Freeway Junction westbound. Then make a right on the Sealmar Boulevard exit to the underpass. You can't miss it. You see a giant inflatable rat outside of Walmart, you've gone too far. Come on down, we're open all night. Bring the kids." End quote. Remember, Christ was crucified so you could live your dreary little lives slaving away in an endless series of bleak service industry jobs. Not so you can waste the day worshiping random drain patterns. You want to worship yellow salt stains? Go pray to Gary Busey's dentures. So get ready, Hedonites. We're soon all of God's chosen people, i.e. Southern Baptists and a few Methodists, we'll be sitting at the throne of Jesus and his pet hedgehog, Nibbles. Actual rapture results may vary. May cause dry mouth and anal leakage.
Whoa.
Until then, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell.
Yes, hell. Ooh. Hey, thank you very much, Cardinal. Worshipping random drain patterns.
That's right.
It's good stuff, man.
Anal leakage?
Yeah.
Speaking of random drain patterns, I don't make this stuff up.
Okay.
You just read the labels, right?
Yeah,
you're just reporting what's happening.
I don't make the news.
Yeah, I know. The news happens and you report it as you see it through your eyes. Right, Cardinal?
That's right, Marin.
Have you ever been married, Cardinal?
I've married in what sense? I'm married to Jesus.
Have you ever cohabited with a member of the opposite or of the same sex?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Define cohabitant and define same sex.
All right. Quick question. The Pope, what do you think? New Pope, huh? What do you think, new Pope?
I think he's a great man. you know, if you like the Antichrist.
Yeah.
This man is ex-Hitler youth, you know. He's got organizational skills. You got to give him that. You know?
Hey, he was conscripted.
I like when we just talk off the cuff like this, Cardinal.
Conscript, conscript.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you, when you're 13, you know what you're joining. That's all I'm saying.
You're a hard man.
Bacon? Anything? Bacon?
Bacon?
Yeah.
I like my tofacon.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Cardinal. So I, you know,
thank you, Mark.
It's great seeing you. Are you just going to hang out, or?
Yeah. What's coming up in the next seg?
Let's see. We're going to talk. Well, you know, we're going to talk about Justice Sunday. You know, James Dobson.
I love that movie, Justice Bloody Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just. This is,
what? Am I going? What happened now?
I don't know. You want
me to leave now?
Yeah, also, you know what I did yesterday, Cardinal? I called to try to get it stopped. I tried to report this horrendous meeting of anti-American, anti-constitutional, fascist whack jobs to the Louisville authorities, and I actually called the church where it's going to be taking place so some action can be taken to stop this Christo-fascist zombie brigade. You know what I'm saying?
God, you are great.
I've had enough of this. I have. You know, it's always great to see you. I hope you have a good weekend. You gonna come hang out later with the rest of the crew
at the
party?
Yes, I am.
You don't need to tell everybody where we're going to be, but well, I'm glad we caught that.
At your apartment in Astoria?
Yeah. 44 past the hour. We'll be back. Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You know, with George W. Bush in charge, the weather forecast calls for Armageddon. That's why I stay prepared by tuning in to Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Again, I'd like to apologize to our San Francisco listeners who listen from 6 to 9 a.m. We're your morning drive time show. We're being hijacked. We're being taken off the air there by your Clear Channel affiliate who have decided for you that you'd rather hear Jerry Springer in the morning, who is also on Air America. So it's always interesting when these alliances of businesses, you know, work against themselves. But, you know, we're going to miss you, and it kind of breaks my heart there. Just, you know, so many emails coming in that people that are upset. Nothing we can do about it. It's in the hands of the people, and also obviously in the hands of Clear Channel. But we'll be out in the middle of the night. If you want a podcast or seek other ways to find us, you can go to morningsedition.com for that information. Again, apologies. This was a decision made by Clear Channel and Air America Radio to put Springer on in place of us in San Francisco. So, sorry, but that's the way it is for now. I am going to now talk about something that I'm very passionate about, and I think everyone should be passionate about. I don't think we can dismiss the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade. I don't think we can dismiss the seeds of fascism in this country. I think that many people, that's, you know, moderate Republicans, old-school fiscal conservative Republicans, Democrats and liberals who don't think that this is a pressing issue are greatly mistaken. I think that the ilks or the likes of James Dobson, Tony Perkins, Focus on Family Research Council, all these people that are going to be meeting down there at Justice Sunday in Louisville, Kentucky, who are going to be simulcasting that event to 1,000 churches, this is unprecedented, are trying to rally the troops to take over the judiciary branch of the government or to force the judiciary, to force the president's hand, to force the Congress's hand to break up the Ninth Circuit court in California. They see this as their window of opportunity. These people shamelessly want this country to be a theocracy and are willing to do anything to get that power. Now, realize that these are not regular Christians. These are people that are exploiting frightened people who may be religious or lost, stupid people who want guidance, and they are doing nothing more than creating a fascist movement, and they're using the Republican Party for cover, and some of them are playing along, and some of them are actually within the party. Now, Mark, it seems that there is a tape recording that is come to light that has Family Research Council President Tony Perkins talking to James Dobson.
James Dobson, yes.
Yes, founder of Focus on Family. James Dobson, of course, a PhD in child development, which is important when you talk to people that have the emotional spectrum and the intelligence of small children, easily guided to wearing the same uniform or thinking the same thoughts. But this is a fairly telling conversation that we have a few segments from here. We don't have sound because I guess it was super secret.
Yeah, it was super secret.
Yeah, Anthony Perkins says to Dobson, quote, "There's more than one way to skin a cat, and there's more than one way to take a black robe off the bench."
Mm-hmm. Starve the beast.
And that goes along lines of, you know, Tom DeLay once said, quote, "We set up the courts, we can unset the courts, we have the power of the purse," unquote. That's Tom DeLay, who has nothing, had nothing but contempt for liberalism, for democratic causes, for the core values that make this country great. These people use tolerance and diversity as negative words. These people say things like, they believe in tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in acceptance. They believe in embracing diversity, the dirty, filthy animals. This is the way these people talk.
Yeah.
This is the way that Dobson's kid talks. This is the way that Dobson talks. He comes off as Mr. Grandpa, but these people are going after a power grab. They want nothing more to create a theocracy. Here's some more quotes. Quote, this is from Dobson again in conversation with Tony Perkins. Quote, "Very few people know this, that the Congress can simply disenfranchise a court." This is something Dobson said. Quote, "They don't have to fire anybody or impeach them or go through that battle. All they have to do is say the Ninth Circuit doesn't exist anymore and it's gone," end quote. That's not true, Mr. Dobson. Not if the people fight you and your fascist ways. Now, I don't know exactly what people can do, Riley, but, I mean, raise awareness. You can't dismiss this.
No, you can't dismiss this. Look, one of the things that people are doing is that there is this clergy and lady network that is holding a counter demonstration, a protest, at a church in Louisville, Kentucky, to this Justice Sunday. That's one thing that people are doing. But the fact is, these folks are looking to say, look, we don't even want to go through the process that exists for getting rid of judges, all right? They don't, this is used as an alternative to the impeachment process. The impeachment process takes too long. It's a process. They don't want a process. What they want to do is say, well, okay, we'll just take away their money. They won't have any staff. They won't be able to hear cases. And that way, sooner or later, I guess they think they'll just disappear. This is actually, on this level, to have evangelicals talking this way should scare every American. I don't care whether you ever set foot in a court in your life, this should scare you. Because what it means, this is beyond just blurring the lines between church and state. This is a church takeover of the state.
But that's what they want. And the thing is that people are like, hey, it's a minority. You guys are giving it too much credence. You know, that's what the Jews said in Germany. I mean, you know, it's not going to unfold the same way. But these guys, they're going to chip away and chip away until one day you wake up and someone's going to be at your door asking whether or not you believe in what they believe in. And if you don't, you know, you can't work at your job anymore. You got to find somewhere else to live. I mean, this stuff happens in big countries. But a lot of people, I use the word fascism in an interview with Brown Magazine, with some kid from Brown Magazine. He's like, really? Fascism? I mean, come on, like, that's so retro. He had this weird tone with me that to even use the word fascism is some outdated, you know, stupid thing to say. And it just scares me because I see moderate Republicans, I see people within their party, within the Republican Party, moderate Republicans and fiscally conservative old school Republicans who are allowing this alignment to continue as being just the same as the good German, the person that thinks like, well, you know, if that's our voting base, I guess we have to work with them here. I think that you guys, you know, if any of you listen to this show, are making a tremendous mistake. And any Democrat or liberal or progressive that thinks this isn't an important issue and there are more important issues to talk about at this juncture, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind because this is what's driving the Republican Party. And this is a quote. You know, this is from Dobson as well. And this lets you know the immediacy of what they have on their mind. Quote, if we let that 18 months get away from us and then maybe we got Hillary to deal with or who knows what, we absolutely will not recover from that. See, he's thinking about the future in terms of he's seeing this as their moment. They are trying to mobilize millions of people to rally behind this. I don't even know what the implications of this are. I mean, Lord Lord knows, listen to me. Norm Olsen of the Michigan militia was trying to unify the militia organization to kidnap Terry Schiavo. You know, Tom DeLay comes out, you know, talking about, you know, Terry Schiavo, trying to make a martyr, a saint out of Terry Schiavo. There is some, you know, some hope on the horizon in terms of Pax Christi USA, the National Catholic Peace Movement, strongly criticized Bill Frist's participation in the upcoming Justice Sunday, all right, which is good news. Ken Salazar, the Democrat elected senator in Ohio, lashed out.
Colorado,
right. Lashed out on Focus on Family, which I think is headquartered in his state.
Well, see, Ken Salazar is no one's idea of a radical senator. These guys, they think they are so close to achieving their goals, so close, and they are prepared to criticize. You know who they're criticizing? They're criticizing people like Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, a right-wing guy, George Allen from Virginia, a right-wing guy, Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court, a relatively right-wing, Senator Wright, Supreme Court Justice. They are prepared to eat their own legs to get what they want, and that's what people need to understand about this cabal that is going to be in Louisville Sunday.
Who's wearing the pants in that party?
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? And also, you know, I tried to take some action. I called the Louisville police to see if we could get this thing stopped, and I called the church. We'll hear about that later. Chris Hedges just wrote a piece in Harper's about the Dominion Christians. He's going to be on the show later, too. It's going to be a good hour, folks.
Yeah, don't miss it. We're coming back. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Morning Sedition with Mark Maron is me. That's Mark Riley.
That's me.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. I'm very excited. And later in this hour, we've got Chris Hedges is going to be coming in to talk to us about his Harper's Magazine piece, Doing the Hate with the National Religious Broadcasters. He's going to give us a frame for the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigades because they know what they're doing. They're all on the same page. The Dominion Christians want to take over the government, and he's got some great insight into that. I tried to stop this thing at the Highview Baptist Church on Sunday, this Justice Sunday thing. I called the Jefferson City Police. I called the Louisville Metro Police. I tried to call the church. Let's hear that, can we?
Jerry Sound, please, my touch credits.
Yeah, hi. Are you guys aware of this thing you got going on down there, this Justice Sunday?
Okay, that's in Louisville Metro Police's district. You'll need to contact them.
You know about it, though, right?
Yes. Well, we're familiar with it, but it's not in our area, sir.
You guys scared down there at all?
No.
You sure?
Positive, sir.
All right. Well, thanks for all your help.
You're welcome.
Police Friday Mess, Elmore.
Hi. How are you? I just wanted to make sure that somebody knows about this thing that they're doing at the Highview Baptist Church, this horrendous anti-American revolution of these people that want to overthrow the judiciary branch of the government. I'm very concerned. Are you guys on top of that?
I'm not.
Oh.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's called Justice Sunday. There are people that are trying to incite violence against judges. These people are trying to overthrow the U.S. government, and they're doing it right in Louisville at the Highview Baptist Church on Sunday.
Really?
Yes. I just wanted to see if anybody was going to, if you guys are aware of it.
Okay.
So can we get somebody over there on Sunday to maybe arrest James Dobson?
To do arrest him for what, sir?
For inciting violence against against judges.
But we're not going to go over there unless there is some type of action like that.
They're saying that they want to overthrow the judiciary branch of the U.S. government.
And for what purpose?
Because they want to make this country a theocracy.
I think that would be up to the voters at large, sir.
The voters, you can vote on theocracy?
No, you can vote on the judges.
No, I don't. I think the judges are appointed.
The judges are, no. For the most part, there are elected officials who appoint those judges. And the voters will speak, and it's not up to any, anybody like that to overthrow anything. It's up to the voters at large.
These people are misleading people, and they're trying to give a distorted vision.
That's your opinion, okay?
No, it's a fact.
It's your opinion.
This is a country built on the separation of church and state.
Okay, I'm not going to argue the point with you. It is your opinion, okay?
Well, no, there's a constitutional separation of church and state that must be maintained.
That is your opinion.
No,
there is a law, yes, sir. There is a federal law stating that. But as far as these people overthrowing the government and judiciary, whatever.
Okay, it seems like the Constitution is not an opinion. It's a constitution of the country.
I'm not arguing the point with you, sir, again. You can do whatever you choose to do, okay?
I thought we were arguing. Wow.
Good morning, Hobby Baptist Church.
You guys, are you concerned about the thing you got going on there on Sunday?
Pardon, sir?
Well, I find myself concerned. You're doing Justice Sunday down there, right?
Yes, sir. You said you're with who?
Air America.
Air America?
Yeah.
Okay. I would need to let you speak to Gary Gupton. Could you hold one moment?
Sure.
Thank you.
You have reached the Fellowship Supper hotline at Highview Baptist Church. Reservations for supper must be made before $1.50 for preschoolers, $3 for
we can make reservations for supper,
and $5 for 6th grade to adults.
Mm-hmm.
The menu for Wednesday, April the 20th, is fried chicken, cheesy potatoes, corn, broccoli salad, and taco lush.
Cheesy potatoes sounds pretty good.
If you would like to make a reservation, please leave a message after the tone.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to make a reservation for 500 people for dinner. All of us will only be eating cheesy potatoes, and also oh, you people are bad.
I've got a trickle
off
there.
Well, that kind of boiled it all down and put it in a nutshell, didn't it?
We started out with we're going to save the country. Can we get some cheesy potatoes here? Let's take a quick call from Chuck, who's actually in Louisville. Chuck, how are you? Good morning. What's going on down there? You guys bunkered in?
Hey, Chuck.
Hi, we're getting ready for the protest. We're expecting about 200 people total, but we're coordinating with MoveOn.org and a few other things. One thing I wanted to bring up to you guys, I called the church about 3.5 hours ago.
Did you make reservations for dinner?
Well, I didn't know about the cheesy mac and cheese and all that.
Cheesy potato.
Yeah, yeah.
I almost dropped the phone when I was listening to that just a second ago. But the problem that I have with the whole thing is I called in and I asked, you know, I said, well, you know, we're a few people have some problems with what's going on out there. We're going to come out and carry some signs. Just wanted to, you know, the gentleman's warning, all that stuff.
Sure.
The woman on the phone wouldn't give me her name. Bluntly told me that anybody who comes on the property would be promptly arrested.
By who? Church police?
Yeah. Well, I'm curious as to who's going to arrest who, because the lady you just had on the phone there just said that she wasn't going to arrest anybody. So I'm just kind of curious as to how that's going to work out. But anyhow, can I throw out my website?
Sure.
BlackWednesday.org. We're in the process of taking applicants for anybody who wants to come down and hold a sign. We're having a party today of building them, and this is kind of a progressive bastion in the middle of a bright red state, and we're doing everything we can to take the state back. We only went about 60% Republican in this last election, and that's close enough to work with, in my opinion.
Well, that's great news.
No doubt.
Well, thanks for doing what you're doing. That's BlackWednesday.org.
BlackWednesday.org. We've been on the line since the day after the election.
Well, we appreciate it. We'll get in touch with you another time, see how things are progressing down there.
Thank you. I'll email you and let you know how it goes.
All right, thanks, Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck.
Oh, that's good, man. I'm glad that somebody's covering that down there.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make you feel happy?
Definitely.
Elena in San Francisco, good morning.
Hi, Elena.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
Preparing to be a very tired healthcare provider next week. I'm not a baker, I'm not a tweaker, I'm not a newspaper deliveryman. I'm going to be getting up at 3:00 in the morning because you guys are the best show on there.
Oh,
well, thank you.
That's so nice.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not just saying it to kiss up.
No, I know. What kind of healthcare provider are you in? What kind do you do?
Nursing, home health nursing and hospice.
Oh, well, so you don't have to be awake for that.
Yeah,
exactly. Put that bedpan down.
Well, I certainly appreciate you saying what you said, and thanks for getting up. But don't hurt yourself or anything.
Yeah, please.
Oh no.
Okay, good. You're great. Take care, Elena.
Thanks, Elena.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, that was sweet. I'm going to cry. Okay, we're going to come back. Chris Hedges, this is great timing because his piece in Harper's is just awesome. And, you know, I love this book. I don't know if any of you read that. War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. Very personal, provocative, and somewhat disturbing book about, you know, his days as a war correspondent, and talks about actually, you know, addiction to the sort of like frenzy and insane hyper-reality of being, you know, covering war and conflict, and also the implications of war in societies that sort of feed on it. Well, that aside, his new piece in Harper's is all about being at the Christian Broadcasters Convention, and he talks specifically about the Dominion Christians, which is really the force behind Justice Sunday and behind the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigades. We'll be back with Chris Hedges in just a few minutes. It's almost. It is actually now 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to be talking to Chris Hedges in a minute. I need to say happy birthday to my mother. Happy birthday, Mom. You know, I realized that I wasn't saying because I block it. Let me explain to you why I block it. For most of my life, my mother was 27 years old. And once she couldn't say that she was 27 years old anymore, we were encouraged never to acknowledge her birthday. But, you know, after wrestling with this and realizing that I may have made some sort of horrendous oversight, I'm going to wish my mother a happy 35th birthday. I know it's incredible that she is that young a woman to have a son my age, but, you know, some things defy understanding, but my mother is 35 today. Happy birthday, Mom. I hope you're still listening and I don't have to pay for this. I know that you usually do your you know, running at 6:30 and then your Pilates at 6:45 and then you make the breakfast and the strange Cuisinart with the Jell-O and the stuff, but it is 8:20, so maybe you're still listening. Happy 35th birthday, Mom. All right, here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it's tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, of course, we have this iNews 5000, the Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Okay, here we go. Here we go. From ABC News, President Bush marks Earth Day. Here, we put that in there. President Bush marks Earth Day. Translation, traumatized planet begs for mercy. Okie doke. From Fox News, Pope reaches out to rabbi. Pope reaches out to rabbi. Translation, anonymous source finally returns Nazi war loot. Oh, come on. From Associated Press, Michael Moore sets up scholarship for rebels. Michael Moore sets up scholarship for rebels. Translation, windfall scene for next generation of smug malcontents. There you go. So right now in the studio with us, the author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, a book I found very compelling. And also he is a senior fellow at the Nation Institute and the writer of a recent piece in today's, yeah, I think it came out today, the new Harper's, Feeling the Hate with the National Religious Broadcasters. Chris Hedges is with us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
So now I wanted to go someplace where they were broadcasting Justice Sunday today, and I didn't really look into it, but you can just walk into this thing that you went to, and nobody said, who's that guy? Is he one of us? Well, yeah, you don't look necessarily, you don't look like a rebel, per se.
You can walk into most of these events because they're not used to being covered. I mean, that's what's fascinating. You know, this the National Religious Broadcasters Association brings together the most powerful Christian, or let's call them Christian right, broadcasters in the country, and because they're uncovered, and they're so used to speaking amongst themselves without any kind of monitoring, you can sit in on this stuff and hear absolutely outrageous stuff, as you can by just simply turning on the radio or turning on Christian broadcasting. I mean, none of this is hidden. None of these assaults or attacks on the open society are hidden. It's all in plain view for anybody who takes the effort to look.
But many people from certainly, you know, from the left and obviously within the Republican Party and certain and Republicans that don't consider themselves evangelical Christians or even fanatical Christians are just allowing this stuff to go by. They say, like, well, it's a minority, you know, it's not really a threat. But I've been under the impression, and a few other people in the media, like Mark Crispin Miller, have really taken it upon themselves to alert people that this is a real threat to democracy.
Well, I think, in fact, some of the people who are most cognizant of that are, well, you know, let's call them traditional evangelicals like Louis Palau or Billy Graham,
mm-hmm.
as well as traditional conservatives. One thinks of Christy Todd Whitman, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They made a kind of Faustian bargain with these people to take power. And I think that the tables have now turned. I think they thought the Christian right were sort of the useful idiots. In fact, they've become the useful idiots.
So now this secret, they, like you said before, this is in plain view, but they're not used to getting covered, yet they have a tremendous following, you know, in the millions, and they are reaching out for more and more people. The interesting thing I found about your article and being there is that you really get the sense that these people are attacking this on all fronts, and they don't care one way or the other whether the people that they don't care that they're not being covered. They're not seeking that type of press because they are fanatical, and they believe in their message, and they have a lot of systems in place to bring people in.
Well, you know, in many ways they're immune from coverage and criticism because they have created parallel media organizations which inform their own and have there's been an assault on mainstream media, not just liberal media, but mainstream media. I mean, they hate the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done over a period of time is essentially discredit, you know, what I would call traditional mainstream objective journalism as being biased. And, you know, having spent 15 years of my life at the New York Times, this has been something that many liberals have not known how to handle, because there's that notion that, you know, everybody should have their say, everybody should, every viewpoint should be given a voice. And when you look at the media system that they put in place, it's, of course, a complete denial of any other viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, a very concerted assault. So, you know, in this shrinking mainstream or liberal media and this diminishing space that we have, even the assaults that we make are you know, sort of they're impervious to attack because they're now feeding their own with sources of information. And they even if they hear us, they don't trust us anymore.
One of the things that struck me about your piece was when you say that this group of people that were at this convention are really a hybrid. There are fundamentalists, there are Pentecostals, there are Southern Baptists, there are Catholics, there are Charismatics. And I think a lot of times people on the outside tend to lump all of these folks together. The one thing that I really wonder about here is that many of these denominations and many of these different groups that have come together tend to believe that theirs is the only true religion. How do they resolve that at a convention?
You know, that's one of the most interesting and fascinating points. And, you know, I grew up in the church. I graduated from seminary. I know the church. These kinds of alliances, as you point out, were absolutely unthinkable, even a decade ago. But what it is that they have found a common cause. Every Christian revival movement in this country, and we've had several since our founding, I mean, we were essentially a theocracy when we were founded, has been to pull people away from the secular world, from the contamination of the secular world. This revival movement is different. It's about taking power. It's radically different from every other revival movement. And that common goal of creating the Christian state, the Christian nation, has brought together these desperate and often warring groups. Those ideological differences remain. They remain deep. But right now, they're united against what they perceive as a common enemy, secular humanists, secular society, and the goal of creating the Christian state.
So I guess they'll after they take over the country, they'll work out their own problems later.
Well, they'll go to war.
That'll be the Civil War.
Oh, if that doesn't happen between... All right, we're going to finish talking about this. It gets me very worked up. We're talking to Chris Hedges. We'll be talking to him more when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
24 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We are talking to the author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, and also the author of a recent article in Harper's, Feeling the Hate with the National Religious Broadcasters. Chris Hedges is with us. We're talking about the Christian right, the Dominion Christians, who are, you know, meeting this Sunday at Justice Sunday down there in Louisville at the High View Baptist Church. Now, the one thing I get from listeners occasionally is like, don't lump us all together. You know, they're not real Christians. Now, you come from a very religious background. Is that, how do you respond to their supposed Christianity?
Well, I think, you know, as someone who grew up in the church, my father was a Presbyterian minister, my mother went to seminary, I graduated from Harvard Divinity School with the intent of being an inner-city minister, although I finally wasn't ordained and became a journalist. As somebody who grew up in the church, you react angrily because you understand in a way that I think many people who are not biblically literate don't understand how grossly they have distorted the Bible to fit this political agenda. I don't know how you can read the four Gospels and not see that Jesus was a pacifist. I'm not a pacifist, but Jesus was a pacifist. Jesus rejected the mantle of secular power. Jesus never spoke about homosexuality, not once, nor abortion, for instance. The only instance in the Bible where Jesus appears to endorse violence is in the book of Revelations, a very controversial book that Martin Luther didn't even think should be in the Bible. And that, of course, is what they quote from exclusively, along with the very apocalyptic sort of vision of Paul. I mean, if you look closely, they cite very narrow segments of the Bible to fit their political agenda. And I think how can you argue that you're pro-life and pro-death penalty? I mean, the contradictions, the theological contradictions at the most basic level are so gross and absurd that for those of us who are informed by faith, I think we react with a great deal of anger. And I think the most powerful opposition movement to the Christian right is going to come out of the evangelical church. Because don't forget that many of the people who follow this movement are decent, good, hardworking, sincere people. There is a kind of moral rot within our society. They're not wrong about that. But I think they're being used and manipulated. And I think that when those people wake up to what's happening, I think many of these people don't endorse the kind of totalitarian society that ultimately Dominionist and Christian Reconstructionists are pushing. And I think when they wake up, as you saw with that small segment of the Protestant church led by Niemöller and Bonhoeffer in Nazi Germany, that's where the most virulent opposition will come, from those who feel betrayed.
Oh, good.
Now, you spent your time out in Anaheim, California, at the annual convention of the National Religious Broadcasters. They claim they reach 141 million people across this country, and actually, I guess, across the world, in fact.
Mm.
What kind of America, when you come out of an experience like that, what kind of America do you think they actually want to see? I mean, we see it in broad outlines, but I mean, I think at a point, you know, folks that are listening to us today may not understand exactly how their lives would change if what these people are espousing actually begins to take place.
Well, if you don't have to take my word for it, because you can, with a little research, go and find out what kind of an America they propose. I mean, you know, go read Dobson or all of these people you were speaking about earlier. But basically, it's a theocratic state where you are empowering an authoritarian church. One of the most important movements for them is, of course, control of education, i.e. vouchers.
Yeah.
And what they want is to create a parallel educational structure. It's why they're starving public schools, starving public universities, and it is a structure, and I have some of the textbooks, American Providential History, for instance, where they talk about this being a nation that is essentially what, in their view, was founded as a Christian nation, and they talk about, you know, Washington fighting battles and the clouds opening up and light coming down. They use a lot of, when we get the term dominionism, they talk a lot about Genesis. This comes from Genesis, and the notion that in Genesis, man is given dominion, you know, over the
so it's revisionism.
I think it's even worse. You mean sort of Christian revisionism?
Yeah.
I think it's worse than that. I think what it is a political theology that, if you look at some of the classical texts that describe fascism, Robert Paxton's book, Anatomy of Fascism, Hannah Arendt's Origins of Totalitarianism, It is a political movement.
Well, I guess I mean they're using historical revisionism as a tool to bring on.
Oh, completely.
Right.
I mean, it's mythology.
Right.
It's not even revisionism.
Okay.
Because it's not a matter of looking at history from another angle. It's a matter of creating a history that wasn't there.
Which is what fascism does.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. I mean, and there are so many elements in their movement. The cult of masculinity. You know, the notion of...
Whoa, what's that?
Well, the cult of masculinity is, you know, they want to create a patriarchal society. I mean, all of the assaults that they make against women, whether it's about, people who are pro-choice, whether it's about, putting women in the homes, all of it is about disempowering women.
Right.
Oh, is this the whole women must submit to their husbands kind
yeah,
of?
Yeah, you know, look, Promise Keepers, that was one of the oaths, I mean, that was one of the undercurrents of Promise Keepers. You know, these guys would all go in polo shirts and stadiums and promise, to be true to their wives. But then also that they would go home and say, you know, I forget the exact wording, but it's like, well, honey, I gave you too much power and it put too much of a burden on you and I'm going to take it back.
God, look at how they twist things.
Exactly. And if you look at the churches, I mean, I think we focus far too much on the mega churches. The mega churches are an anomaly. What we have are many, many small churches where the pastor becomes a patriarchal, always male, authoritarian figure. And what it is about creating a society where... on many levels.
Sorry, we didn't want our hand signals to mess you up there.
Yeah.
Creating a society on many levels where power is reduced into the hands of a few men. And I would say, let's be clear about this, white men, because this movement, the Christian right movement, came out of the segregationist movement.
Well, that's another thing I want to ask you, is the alignment between, like, the whole sort of, you know, I guess, what's his name, Rush Dooney from the Reconstructivists, like, the alignment, the growth of the American right and the racist, you know, Christian right, you know, sort of happened simultaneously starting in the early 70s, correct?
Yes.
And now somehow they, you know, they're intertwined and the militia is somewhere in there as well. Well, they seem to be straddling something, constitutional rights and Aryan Nation stuff. Now, in the Dominion Christian, like Justice Sunday, let's talk about, you know, the fundamentals in terms of how do they see race? What is really going on at the core of that?
That's one of the most important aspects that I think on the surface they manage to hide very well. Because if you, what they do is they take Glenn Plummer and a few of these other African-American preachers and put them out very prominently out front. In fact, what they use them for often is, they use them in two ways. One is to attack Muslims. I would engage in hate talk against Muslims. I saw this with Plummer in Anaheim. And he gets away with it in their eyes because, of course, he's after an African-American. The other thing is to go after other African-Americans, especially the civil rights movement.
Jesse Jackson.
Yeah.
Right off the top.
And I find that, you know, if you look around the room where I was, of 5,000 people, you could not see very many people of color. And most of them were sitting up on the stage.
Hmm.
These people have really, you know, sold out their own communities. But they become very powerful. Michael Medved, you know, he was there speaking.
Well, let's talk about that, too. Now we've talked about race a little bit. Let's talk about this strange triangular alignment between, you know, there is this idea that Israel is necessary for the Second Coming, the Temple Mount, and that there's a lot of Christian right money going into Israel to facilitate the Second Coming. And that this is also a priority of the Republican Party. There's a strange triangulations that go on like that. Talk about a little bit about the relationship between Israel and this Dominionist Christian movement.
From a theological perspective, the notion of the rapture, Jesus coming back in the Second Coming and punishing non-believers, this is, you know, the whole end time series, mm-hmm. the Hay books, and, you know, people will be eviscerated and their eyes will pop out and all this horrible stuff. I mean, this is really raw anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
But what they've done is... and, of course, as we spoke earlier, they've created this kind of mythology, and they see the war in Iraq as predicted in the Book of Revelations, et cetera, et cetera. So they believe that the Jews have to temporarily control the Holy Land in order for Christ to return. But, of course, those Jews that don't convert will be killed in horrible ways along with all other non-believers.
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened is that there has been this strange marriage, the alliance between essentially messianic Israeli Jews and messianic American Christians.
And they're different messiahs.
Yes. But what they have in common is a belief I think in both cases that they have a right to run the Middle East.
Okay.
And that at a very basic level is what's happened. And you see it with someone like Medved. And they're all, you know, it was the big white elephant in the room. Everybody knew, you know, when I went to this breakfast that was the biggest display in Anaheim was by the Israeli Ministry of Tourism. And I went to this huge breakfast, and of course that's never mentioned. I mean, it's they both know it, but it's of course never addressed. But I think that when you burrow underneath, what it is a political alliance between these two messianic groups that engage in racist talk and believe, especially in the Middle East, that they have a right to tell one-fifth of the world's population, who are Muslims, how to live their lives.
Mm. Can you hang out for a few minutes?
Can you stay with us?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Chris Hedges, we're talking to Chris Hedges. We, you know, obviously we're engaged and we want to, you know, finish up this conversation when we come back about the Dominion Christians. His article is in Harper's this month. So stay with us. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, let's land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Thank you, City Bakery. Thank you, Doug Krieger. The stuff is here. It's very nice.
Thanks, Doug.
We have Chris Hedges in the room. His book is War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. He's got a recent piece in the Harper's Magazine about his experience at the Christian Broadcasters Convention.
Yeah.
And what I want to know in relation to this Dominion Christians, in relation to this big revival of the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigade down there in Louisville, is when do we start to feel physically threatened? What are these people capable of? What do you see?
Well, I think part of the problem is that although they have this very radical agenda that they want to push through, they haven't really been able to implement it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for instance, you know, abortion hasn't become murder. I think that, you know, especially under this administration, these kinds of changes could begin to happen very soon. I think, unfortunately, that's when people are beginning to wake up.
Right.
And I really think that two-thirds of this country or more, including many people in their movement, do not want to live in an intolerant world like this. But they have now burrowed so deeply within the centers of power, and of course this assault on the judiciary is one of the most crucial battles that we've fought in decades,
mm-hmm.
That they may be unstoppable. And like most radical movements, they could care less. They have a vision of truth. It's an absolute truth. They totally, not only do they delegitimize other positions, but they demonize other positions. I mean, if you look at the language they use to talk about people like us, it's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're satanic. You know, we are trying to destroy, you know, the Christian, the Christian society that was meant, you know, and that kind of language, having watched it in places like Israel, you know, when they went after Yitzhak Rabin, language is not benign. Language is very frightening. And when you empower people to speak the language of hate, as I saw in the war of Yugoslavia, and that filth is kind of pumped into the airwaves day after day after day, it's a very short step from turning people linguistically into objects to turning them into objects quite literally, i.e. corpses. I mean, you know, that hate language always presages violence in every society. I mean, I was a war correspondent for 20 years, in every society that I covered. And so when I hear that kind of language, it scares me. It scares me.
You know, I just wanted to thank you for writing this article, and you really kind of turned me on to your divinity school professor, the late Dr. James Luther Adams, who warned about this. How long ago?
25 years ago.
He said that that fascism would have a Christian face. Chris Hedges, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you coming. A big fan of yours, and the article is great. I'd like to have you back again some other time if you could.
Sure.
It looks like we got a quick call here from Ted in Nebraska.
Hi, Mark and Mark.
Yeah.
Why are you so threatened by Justice Sunday? Is it because you can't support your ideas?
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when it's... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Hotel Pennsylvania.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 15 before the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, God's favorite vertically integrated murky multinational. Just this Sunday is coming up, and Mark the Shark is, oh my God, oh yeah, I think I just made my offering. Sorry about the plague. Hey, neocons, the neocons are gathering for a big show down in Louisville, Kentucky this weekend. They call it Just This Sunday, but for activist judges, it's going to be Sunday Bloody Sunday. Yeah, let freedom ring. Everybody's going to be there, like Bill Frist, James Dobson, Barbara Boxer. Oh, just kidding. Watch out, liberal activist judges. You're about to be Bible pounded. Hey, eat scripture, creep. Have some Deuteronomy, secular stupidist.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Stupidist! That's what I said before. What do you Democrats have against people of faith, huh? What's the matter, liberals? You're afraid of God. Hello, this is God. All Democrats are wrong. All of you are going to hell, and you are stupid. Just like Mark the Shark says, every day on Right and Early, weekdays from 6 to 9. I love it. Thanks, God. I knew you were on my side. You sounded kind of funny, though. Hey, it's 12 minutes before the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Oh, those damn liberals, feminazis, tax and spend.
That's right. That's right. Right you are, caller. We do have to kill those Democratic filibusters. Hey, I just thought of something. It should be called the killibuster. Get it? Killibuster. Nomination approved. You've been charged. Hey, it's time for the neocon traffic. Looks like John Bolton's caught in a Democratic gridlock. Oh, my mistake. Roads clear all the way to the UN. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Well, what just happened? Did I black out again in front of?
Yeah, man. You're gonna have to start taking something for that.
Wow. I hate when that happens. Let's take a quick call. Amy, how are you, Amy? What's on your mind?
Hi, Amy.
So how am I supposed to follow that?
No. So you got some interesting information.
I do. I used to be one of the people you're talking about.
Oh.
I was super involved in church librarian, taught preschool choir.
Where, at Highview?
No, actually at another church in Louisville, but I used to work at Highview in the daycare there.
And now you've recovered, you're out, you're better?
Well, I moved to Boston to go to college, and
that was it.
There you go.
One for our team.
There you go.
That was sort of the thrust of my point, was that I'm not too optimistic. I hate to use the word lightly, but it's sort of very, very subtle, pervasive brainwashing down there. And I didn't escape it until I actually pulled myself out of that environment.
Well, I'm glad you did, and thanks for calling us. And I'm glad that it's possible that you can pull yourself out of that, Amy.
Thanks,
appreciate
Amy.
Your call. There's the fax machine with the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. One, today is Earth Day. Be gentle with Mother Earth. Remember, she's a rape victim.
No.
Two, protest signing the bankruptcy bill by putting the national debt on your Discover card. Yes. Hey, celebrate Passover. Have a little cirrhosis with your tofu pork, could you? Or demand UN intervention in the dispute between Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie. And five, today's phrase is dropping into conversation. You know what comes after Justice Sunday, don't you? Mind Control Monday. And then onward through to Zeke Heil Saturday. Wake up, sheeple. The sermon's about control, man. Well, Riley, have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend, man. It's been a lot of fun. Chris Hedges, again, a real pleasure. Hope to see you again soon. Huh?
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for hanging out through all that.
Yeah, really. Okay.
He was laughing.
We've had a lot of guests who've left in the middle.
No, he didn't think it was odious, like David Halberstam.
Wait, let me tell you who we got coming up in here next week. Melvin Van Peebles, filmmaker extraordinary, musician Phil Lesh, and the creator of Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane. Have a good weekend.
You too, Riley.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.